The number you have reached, 1, has been changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Ring damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Dies ist viel besser.
Deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say? Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say? Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Thank you.
And a very good evening to one and all. It's 11 minutes after 10 o'clock on this Saturday night, April 8th, 1988. And the program is Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you up until midnight. And Jim Weiner still lurking about. Say hello, Jim.
Hello, and lurk, lurk, lurk.
Yes, Jim's lurking. And we have all kinds of fun things to talk about tonight. Actually, not so fun, really. Kind of serious business here, because that's just the nature of things. But interesting, thought-provoking, and controversial, which is what we're all about here. So I guess it kind of fits in. Our phone number is 632-6901, area code 516. If you have comments on these controversial topics, which you don't know yet because we haven't told you what they are, but you might want to get the jump anyway because some people just like to be controversial no matter what. 632-6901, area code 516. It's a call-in program. We take your calls and we disseminate them all over the airwaves of Long Island and Connecticut. Now, there's a couple of things going on. Tomorrow there will be a huge demonstration in Washington, D.C., all about abortion and pro-choice people. They'll be converging on the Capitol, and there are buses leaving from Stony Brook. Now, I don't know if it's still possible to get tickets for these buses. I really don't know exactly how you would go about getting tickets if you wanted to go at this late stage. I know they're leaving at about 5 in the morning. But if you really want to go, I would suggest calling the Graduate Student Organization or the Student Polity Organization here at Stony Brook and just trying every phone number until you find somebody that knows. Also, the Mid-Suffolk National Organization for Women is sponsoring a bus trip to Washington tomorrow to join the March for Women's Equality, Women's Lives. And this is a rather funny announcement that, according to this, the buses will depart early Saturday morning and return the same evening, thus missing the rally altogether. Hopefully that hasn't happened, in which case there's a bunch of angry people from now about to return. I think they're supposed to leave early tomorrow morning and return tomorrow evening. Anyway, if you're interested in joining the bus trip, well, it's kind of silly the way it's phrased here. Contact the Mid-Suffolk now by writing to them. It's not going to work if you want to get on the bus tomorrow. And certainly visiting their weekly Wednesday meetings won't do you much good either. So you have to do some detective work to find out where they are, since we don't have a phone number for them. Oh, well. But the rally is going to be interesting. The rally is going to be a lot of fun, as rallies tend to be. I don't know how many people have actually gone down to Washington, D.C. for something like that. I've been there for anti-nuclear things and what else? Pro-peace and anti-racism and, anti-bad things and pro-good things usually is what I go down there for. And I think this is an important one. This is probably one of the most important ones in years, because things have changed. Times have changed. And it's distinctly possible that Roe versus Wade, the landmark case that made abortion legal, that case could be overturned this year. And if that happens, there will be grave consequences. Certainly, in my opinion, there will be grave consequences as far as abortion and women's rights and overall health issues, because no matter how you look at it, this is going to go on, and if it's illegal, it's going to be done in back alleys, as the saying goes. So it's an important day to stand up and be counted. Our telephone number again is 632-6901. That's not all that's going on. If you've read newspapers in the last week or so, you know that Stony Brook is very much in the news all of a sudden. In fact, there's a picture of the Stony Brook Union in today's New York Times. Incredible. Picture of the union. And it's not nearly as crowded as it usually is. And of course, it's all focusing on the controversy here on campus of, I don't know how you would phrase it, but what took place was a student was raped here 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, I believe, last Friday. And according to this student, according to the police, The person who did it is another student on campus, and that person, who is a black student, says that he is being framed because of race. He has an alibi. He has witnesses saying he's someplace else. So there's this tremendous controversy now as to whether or not this person is the rapist, whether he's the victim, whether she is the victim, and how big a part racism and sexism is playing in this whole thing. I'm going to go over a couple of stories here from the various newspapers. Where should I start? Well, okay, we had a rally on Thursday here on campus. About 300 students packed a State University at Stony Brook cafeteria on Thursday night to rally in support of Quincy Brandon Troop, the student accused of raping another student on campus. It was the second show of support yesterday for Troop, who says that he is a victim of mistaken identity. Yesterday morning, a similar number of students, or actually Thursday morning, a similar number of students packed District Court in Hauppauge during a 5-minute hearing in the case. Now, C. Vernon Mason, who is Troop's attorney, on Thursday told the audience, about 75% of whom were black, that Troop was a victim of mistaken identity and compared the case to some of the major cases of the civil rights era. I'm here to tell the Suffolk County Police that there are two victims. The person who did this has yet to be arrested. One person is falsely accused. Mason called on the victim to admit that her identification of Troop was a mistake. Why don't you tell the people that the police told you it's got to be one or another? That you described a man weighing 200 pounds? That it's not Quincy? Why don't you come forward and say they manipulated you? The Reverend Calvin O. Butts of the Abyssinian. Yeah, I have trouble with that word for some reason. The Abyssinian Church in Harlem, and an outspoken activist for civil rights, also attended the rally and told the crowd, "I'm sad because in 1989, in the county of Suffolk, the state of New York, you still have persons that cling to the position every black man, every African-American man is guilty until proven innocent," he said. "If they destroy Quincy now, they're coming for you next." Friends of the victim who attended the rally criticized Mason's remarks. Friends of the rape victim, that is. "I don't feel he's encouraging the people who turned out tonight to be open-minded," said Mary Ellen Schlitch, looks like. Another friend, Maria Garina, said it would not be in the victim's best interest to talk about the case. "I feel if she did come out and speak, they would attack her and make her as the bad guy. They would chew her up." Police officials were not available last night to respond to Mason's comments. Troop was arrested Friday, a week ago Friday, that is, and charged with raping a 20-year-old student on campus. She picked his photograph from a school yearbook and identified him in two police lineups. He has maintained his innocence, insisting he can account for his whereabouts at the time of the rape. The victim, however, has maintained Troop was her attacker. She has been so distressed by the on-campus support for Troop that she left school and is trying to arrange a home study program to finish the year, her father said. He said she has been advised not to speak to anyone about the case and in any event is too upset to discuss the matter. She's going through a hard time, he said. Asked if he felt his case has become a racial issue on campus, Troop said, "I can't be concerned with the politics right now. The reality is I'm faced with 6.5 to 25 years in jail." The rally was organized by students on campus. Earlier on Thursday, about 300 students piled into First District Court in Hauppauge to attend a 5-minute hearing, at which time Troop was told to report back to court on May 10th. The 1-month delay was requested by Assistant District Attorney Michael Ahern, whose office is handling the case, and approved by Mason to allow investigators time to interview 9 witnesses who say they can corroborate Troop's alibi. This case is under review by the district attorney's office. During the brief proceeding, about 130 students sat quietly on wooden benches in the courtroom. Another estimated 170 students who could not get inside the packed court stood quietly in a line in the hallway. Although about 23 court officers were on duty in case of any flare-ups, The supporters were so cooperative that Lieutenant Chris Shahukas stood on a bench and called out to thank everyone. Interesting. This has been handled all wrong, said student Joseph Cordon, who with the other supporters met on campus about 8 a.m. and carpooled to the court. They just went and locked him up. After the proceeding, the troop family and Mason worked their way through a throng of supporters, many shouting, "We love you, Quincy," and "Hang in there, Quincy." In a corner of the courthouse lobby, Mason and the troop family stood against a wall as hundreds of supporters and passers-by huddled around to hear Mason declare troop's innocence. "You're really getting an education into how justice works," Mason said. "We're not standing here representing a rapist. We're standing here representing someone who is innocent." He drew cheers from the crowd. Troop looked meekly at the group and under the glare of TV cameras said, "I'm glad that you know and I know I'm innocent. Justice will be done." Sources close to the case have said investigators are stymied by a lack of evidence to corroborate the victim's account or to support the charges against Troop. The sources said that investigators who are questioning the victim's identification of Troop, not whether the rape occurred, are trying to determine the credibility of Troop's alibi and also are searching for any evidence that would support the victim's account. Meanwhile, as the investigation continues and the case remains the focus of controversy on campus, school officials began steps yesterday to head off any racial tensions among students. I should say Thursday they did that. School officials held meetings with students to discuss the case, and instructors were encouraged to speak about it in classes. A special edition of the campus bulletin was distributed, updating the Troop case. The campus bulletin? What's the campus bulletin? Does anybody know what that is? I didn't know we had a campus bulletin here. A special edition of the campus bulletin was distributed, updating the Troop case and explaining the university's regulations and disciplinary procedure. Several students interviewed on campus yesterday said there were no overt racial tensions, but they had noticed small signs of racial animosity. One female black student, for instance, said she had written on her desk, "Free Quincy Troop," but when she had been when she had returned to class, the slogan had been erased and replaced with a racial epithet. Frederick Preston, campus vice president for student affairs, agreed that there is some racial sensitivity on campus, and the Troop controversy has heightened it. He also said there is a great deal of misinformation, and the university is trying to get the facts out to students. "There's a rumor every hour," Preston said. University President John Marburger said, "I am concerned that this event will trigger a racial incident at Stony Brook. There are racial tensions at Stony Brook. Wherever you have a large number of people of different races living together, there are racial tensions." However, he noted that a campus demonstration for better security held Wednesday night involved both black and white students. "That could have easily become a rally about the incident," Marburger said. "I see that as a very good sign. It was not white people supporting a white victim." Nevertheless, some said tensions were developing. "The campus is divided," Troop said. "There are those that support me, and there are those that think I'm lying." Troop's father, a prominent poet and writer, said, "I am sorry this has broken down along racial lines. It just so happens that the victim is a white woman and my son is a black man. This is a racist society, and people will take sides. I am very sorry it has broken down on racial lines, but my son is innocent." I guess the question I'd like to ask our listeners right now is this a racist society? Is what the senior Mr. Troop says, is that true? Does this case demonstrate that this is a racist society? If so, how? If not, why not? 632-6901. Jim, have you been following this case?
Somewhat. I don't know if I have all the details on it.
Uh-huh. It's interesting when something like this happens so close to home.
Yes, it is.
And this is about as close as we can possibly get right here on the campus. And all of a sudden, we're plunged into the headlines. Picture of the Stony Brook Union in today's New York Times. Headlines all over the country about this place. You've been at Stony Brook for a number of years. What do you think as far as racial tensions?
Well, I should say that I'm not on the campus that often in recent times. And so it would be hard for me to I'm not trying to cop out of the question, but I just don't want to make something up. Since I'm not here on a day-to-day basis right now, in order to gauge exactly what the situation is as far as race relations are concerned, but my sense, in a general way, about this country, is that there is certainly a sense in the minds of many people, I'm sure, or a consciousness of the existence of different of people of different complexion that goes beyond the simple awareness of people having different complexions. I think that that there is in many people's minds in this country, whether this is simply a benign or a malevolent form,
uh-huh.
there are all kinds of social, political, and economic implications that arise out of, and historical implications certainly, that arise out of people's awareness of different different skin complexions. And
well, you know, I think that's,
I mean, I know that that's a very broad, sweeping statement, but I, you know, there are all kinds of different reactions that different people have, whether conscious or unconscious, because of that situation,
mm-hmm.
to all kinds of different reactions to all kinds of different situations.
Well, let's give the listeners a chance. 632. Oh, they all hung up. We had a couple of calls and they all hung up at the same time. Oh, well, I don't want to scare anybody. If you want to call up, don't be nervous. 632-6901. We're talking about racism and rape and women's rights and minority rights and the controversy on campus. I guess the question that I'm most concerned about is this being handled in the proper way, both you know, by students and by the campus and by the community? One has to wonder. This whole thing has not reached a courtroom yet. However, this person was suspended from school, and after being suspended from school, it was reinstated. He was put back in school, but he's not allowed on campus anymore, which is kind of disturbing, isn't that judging something before the facts actually come out?
Well, I guess it depends on... I think that opens a very good question, a question that goes beyond not only the specific situation, but to a philosophical question to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what the criteria are for that kind of action of having a student who has not yet been convicted of a crime, and mm-hmm. the situation as it exists now on campus is that Mr. Troop has not yet been convicted of any crime. And I'm not saying, suggesting that he definitely will be convicted of a crime. What I'm saying is that even though it's a cliche, it's very true. A person is innocent until and unless proven guilty. I'm not
exactly.
even suggesting
yeah.
that I know for a fact that he will be proven guilty. What I'm saying is that he is to be presumed innocent at this time. And so you raise a very good question. Here is a person to be presumed innocent, and yet he has been subjected to a limitation that is not the case for the vast majority of students here.
Our number is 632-6901. Let's hear what you have to say. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Good evening. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Okay. You raised an interesting question as to whether this is being taken care of properly. And there are certain departments that should each be dealt with individually. And to start with would probably be those clowns and jokers in the administration department that immediately decided that, well, since he's guilty, we're going to toss him out of school. Right there was the first mistake.
Uh-huh.
So I think that the students' rally that was there, I guess that was Tuesday, really was the outcry and was a well-organized rally at that. that that got him back into school. I don't think that if that event did not happen, then he'd probably still be expelled from school.
Were you at the rally?
As a matter of fact, I was.
How many people were there?
I'd say close to about 200-300.
Really? Now, were there different sides? I mean, were there sides saying that the person who was raped is the only victim here and the true victim, or was there a lot of back and forth?
Well, to answer the first question, is she the only victim? I would say no. She is the victim of a very unfortunate circumstance, and as it turns out, Quincy Troop is now becoming a victim and also a possible suspect in a crime. Notice I said a possible suspect. There's no evidence pointing to him, and in fact he has alibis and people who will swear by his alibis that he was where he says he was. So I think that what's happening here is that she's already a victim, and that's really too bad. And he is now becoming a victim of administration. He's becoming a victim of the press. He's becoming a victim of the system, which is also sad, because he's going to have a name applied to him whether he's guilty or not. He's going to, you know, Quincy Troop, wasn't he that suspected rapist?
Yeah, and people will never be able to say for sure, was he innocent or was he not, unless somebody else comes forward and confesses. All right, well, then how would you say the proper way to handle something like this would be? What should have been different?
I think, first of all, what should have been done was that until there was any evidence whatsoever as to who the suspect or to who the person was, that basically nothing should have been done as far as campus goes. It's totally a separate issue from campus. Suffolk County cops were involved. Those are the people who should be taking care of it, and it should leave Stony Brook clear of it until at one time where they decide his guilt or innocence, at which point then if it turns out that he's guilty, there doesn't need to be a hearing here. He's obviously guilty of the crime proven by the court system outside of this university. Then he would be expelled.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you say the Suffolk County Police should be the ones handling it completely. You know, I think from what I've heard, the Suffolk County Police are a good cause of the problem here with the racism inherent there. And the way they handle investigations. Troop said that he was attempting to give. In fact, there was a piece in the corrections section of the New York Times today saying that they had inaccurately reported that he didn't have an alibi at the time he was arrested. The correction said, yes, he did have an alibi. The police refused to hear it and were just trying to get him to confess.
Yeah, that's true. And there are other things that were said by the cops that aren't in the paper that I've heard from sources very close to Quincy.
Why don't you tell us what they are without being obscene?
Well, there's nothing obscene about them. What one officer said to Quincy was, did you know the girl is white? And Quincy said yes, and then the officer said to him, well, you've got a long way to go, buddy.
Meaning what?
Meaning that obviously because he's black and this girl is white, that he's got a longer road to go than anyone else in the situation that say was not black.
Fascinating. Anything else?
That's it. That's all I know, really, as that end of the story goes.
Uh-huh. What do you think the stage of racism is around here? But meaning not just Stony Brook, but Suffolk County in general.
Well, I don't really live out in Suffolk County. I do live here on campus, and on campus, it's something that is prominent, and it's something that should be dealt with in a way that's, you know, that's more effective, I guess. And things like this aren't helping any.
Right.
If I knew of a way to fight racism, then I suppose I'd be famous right now. And there have been people long before me, and there'll be people long after me, which is also unfortunate, trying to fight racism. And if there was a way for me to get rid of it, then I would.
Well, you look at this case. There's plenty of ammunition for both sides. There's plenty of ammunition for black people who think that white people are nothing but hate mongers who are out to lynch every black person they can find, who can't tell them apart. I mean, there's plenty of ammunition here to give them something to go on. Then for the white people who think that black people are going around committing crimes and getting away with them, there's more ammunition for them, you know. And it's just, this is about the most controversial thing that could possibly happen.
Yeah. Well, what's unfortunate is that there are proportionally the same amount of white people committing crimes as there are black people committing crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, when a white person commits a crime, it's not so publicized. When a black person commits a crime, you know, it's like an everyday occurrence. These people just write it up in the paper as though it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
That's I think, a source of where racism comes from. It's all in the press. It's how it's handled outside.
You know, I don't know if that's particularly true in this case, because I don't think, you know, whether the rapist was white or black, I think the rape would have gotten the same amount of publicity, and the arrest of the person would have gotten the same publicity, except for in this case, of course, the fact that the accused is standing up and saying, I didn't do it, and it's because I'm black and I'm being accused.
See, I don't really agree with that, because there have been other rapes on this campus that haven't even hit the papers. I've been on this campus now. I've been going to school here for close to 2 years, and I've been hanging out here since 1982. And there have been rapes on campus that haven't hit the papers.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
Because I suppose they're afraid of what they call copycats. They're afraid of the publicity. It'll give the school a bad name.
These are rapes that were reported.
There were rapes that were not reported. Rapes that were reported to public safety here on campus, but that was it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you were around during the summer, this past summer, but there was the person known as the Spider-Man who tried to break into the second-story window of Whitman and plunged to the bottom of where Whitman Pub used to be, which is a good, I'd say, 30, 40 feet.
This is a dormitory on campus.
Yes, it is. And that never hit the paper, although this guy was, you know, in the hospital, and he was supposed to have charges brought against him for trespassing, all sorts of things. And as it turned out, he was a student here, and they didn't want this to hit the paper, so they kept it real quiet.
Uh-huh. Who runs the papers here on campus? The students do.
What I'm saying is that it didn't hit the papers because administration stepped in and they said, look, you know, we don't want copycat.
Well, no, I don't understand. How can administration step in and prevent the facts from being there? I mean, it's public information. If somebody gets arrested, you can find out about it. They can't step in and prevent you from finding out about that.
Well, then you explain to me how come this wasn't published or in the press over the summer.
Maybe the journalists here on campus need something to be desired.
Yeah. I have no qualms with that statement.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, these kind of things, good or bad, should be brought to light, no question about it. And that's one thing you can't say is the case here. Everything's being brought to light here.
Yeah, well, I think that it's about time that the things have been going on campus that, you know, that is actually hitting the paper.
Uh-huh.
Like with the shootouts that were here a couple of semesters ago and with this shooting out in Taylor, it's a problem for the administration, and that's why they want to keep these things quiet. It's
uh-huh.
giving this university a bad name, and it's keeping the enrollment down. They're down now close to 1,500 students.
And it's because of things like this?
I would have to assume so.
Interesting. I'm not sure if that's the reason, but it could certainly be a possibility.
Well, I think that if you find out, you know, if you hear about a school that has rapes, shootouts, you know, all sorts of crazy things, then it's going to steer you away from there. I mean, I know that if I wasn't going here, or if I had plans on going here at that time when all the stuff was going on, I'd think twice and say, you know,
right.
I'm not so sure if I would go there.
But as somebody who has gone here, what do you think the true picture of this place is?
I think this place lacks security. I think the security that is on this campus needs to be trained or needs some revamping or something, because things like this shouldn't happen on campus. I know people in campuses, you know, all over New York, in NYU, in Manhattan. Those dorms are safer than they are here. They have guards, paid guards, sitting at desks, checking IDs and making sure that people sign in and out of the building. You know, not students or you know, not minimum paid employees. They have people sitting there at desks checking badges, making sure that you're allowed in the building. If you're not allowed in the building, if you don't have residence in the building, or if someone doesn't come to sign you in, you're not getting into that building.
Well, this rape occurred outside a building, so I don't know if that would have helped.
Had there been a man at a desk where she was going in, then that wouldn't have happened.
She tried to get into the building first, and then, I see. It's still, you know, I understand what you're saying, but it's still going to be possible, no matter how much security is around, for something like this to happen.
I think that if there was that much security around, that people would think twice before they'd actually go about doing it. They know that the public safety here and the security here is awful, and so they can get away with it. If it was more enforced, or if public safety was actually maybe intimidating in some way, rather than laughed at like a bunch of clowns, then things would be different here.
Uh-huh. So, are you supporting the use of, say, guns?
I don't support the use of guns. No, what I support is a respected security unit, and we don't have one here because, first of all, the way they handle things here is incompetent themselves. You know, the public safety officers, and they're just not trained. You know, they don't know how to handle people, it seems.
Well, it's, I mean, why would they not be trained? That's what I'm trying to figure out. You know, isn't it part of the training to become someone like that?
It's, I believe it's a 12-week training program, but obviously it's not as intense as it should be, because if it was, like I said, they wouldn't be laughed at. They would be respected.
Uh-huh.
They're not respected.
Uh-huh.
And it's incidents like the Kelly D incident not too long ago that causes these things in public safety.
I see. Okay, well, I want to thank you for calling.
No problem.
And keep listening to the latest news, I guess, and, you know, let us know if you find out something.
Sure.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, okay.
632-6901. Jim.
Yeah, I was just mentioning before, I just wanted to finish up, the thought I had about someone being suspended before they've even been convicted of something. I don't know what the criteria are for the university procedures, whether for this particular case or any case in general, that whether if someone is simply accused of something, I guess depending upon the individual facts, whether I guess what it amounts to is if someone is accused of something, and depending, I guess, upon certain facts, that person can be limited at least in their presence on the campus, even though it hasn't been established in a court of law that they in fact are guilty of a certain crime. And I think that opens a whole question in general, if that's the case, not only for this particular case but in general about and not only just for this institution but any kind of institution that has regulations where when someone is accused of something but not where it's not established beyond a reasonable doubt that
uh-huh.
that they are in fact guilty of that thing that they are accused of, that they are in effect penalized in some way. And if it were to come out, in the end, let's say in this particular case Mr. Troop is exonerated, the question not only for this particular case but in a general sense is, well, what about the one could raise the question, what about the fairness of somebody being limited in their access to the campus, and where in the end it comes out they had not even done what they were accused of.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is, if apart from any issue that someone may have over the amount of bail, there was an amount of bail set for Mr. Troop. He was able to meet it, and he is not incarcerated at the moment because of that. And from the standpoint of the law, as I understand it, that's perfectly sensible, because bail is essentially set to simply assure that the person will not leave and will show up for subsequent court dates. And
right.
The notion being that that person has not been convicted and therefore should not, if they can show that that it's reasonably certain that they will show up for court dates,
mm-hmm.
Whether through just showing certain facts or being able to post a certain amount of money or bond or whatever, that there's no reason why they should be incarcerated. They haven't been convicted. So one could offer the argument, not only in this case, but I would think one could offer the argument in a general sense, both specifically for this case and in a general sense, that if someone is told that they can't be within a certain area, whether it's this campus or any institution, let's say, because they've been accused of something, is that could that be considered inconsistent with the general legal philosophy that somebody should not be incarcerated, essentially, before they've been convicted, or if they'll never be convicted?
Our number is 632-6901. We're going to go back to the phones in a couple of minutes. First, I'd like to take a look at Statesman, the student newspaper here on the campus in Stony Brook, for this Thursday, talking about the suspension, the university suspension, has about 300 students shouting, "Prove it or drop it, release Quincy troops," circled in an area outside the administration building on Tuesday. Administrators inside heard the evidence that led them to modify an executive suspension, which allowed Quincy Brandon Troop to attend classes but not reside on campus. In fact, he's not even allowed on campus unless he's at a class. He has to sign in and out and all that kind of thing. People marched and chanted from 10 a.m. to around 2 p.m. when Troop and his Manhattan attorney, C. Vernon Mason, as well as family members and friends, came out of the locked administration building to make a statement. The whole administration building was locked. How about that? The crowd roared and clapped as the group appeared, and after statements were made concerning his alibi, a smiling Troop could hardly extract himself from the many people who reached out individually to touch, kiss, and embrace him. University officials notified Troop's family and then the media of their decision around 9 p.m. Tuesday night. Suspension was changed from complete banishment to terms that allow Troop, accompanied by a guard, to enter buildings where he attends classes at the time he attends classes, the engineering library and the administration building, and a Troop must also sign in and out each day as he enters and leaves campus with the Office of Student Affairs. As is the process for all students on campus who are faced with serious charges of violating the student conduct code, Troop was issued an executive suspension banning him from campus on Monday. Seven other students have been issued executive suspensions this school year, according to University President John Marburger, who said that this is not an exceptional move on the administration's part. He has been charged with violating the student conduct code as it relates to assault and physical and psychological abuse, according to the university. And they added that Troop, like most others who have been suspended, took the option to have an appeals hearing within 10 days. No weighing of guilt or innocence took place at the hearing on Tuesday. Now, Paul Chase, Assistant Vice President of Enrollment Management Services, with the consultation of others in the Office of Student Affairs, made the determination to uphold the suspension with several modifications after hearing evidence from Troop, his attorney C. Vernon Mason, family members and friends, and I don't doubt a lot of media, too, that most likely influenced their decision. I mean, if people were quiet about this, I doubt anything would have happened. So it's realistic to say that all the noise and demonstrations had a lot to do with the retraction of that suspension. We gave a full statement and everybody testified, said Mason after the appeal. We are dealing with it in stages. First, we will get him reinstated and then deal with the criminal charges. Troop's record at school reflecting no disciplinary problems, the fact that the campus hearing of the student judiciary would have to be postponed until after the criminal charges are determined, and the assessment of potential risk reduction of Troop's close supervision on campus were also elements weighed in Chase's decision. If he is found on campus at any other time than those specified, or to be on any other location than those specified, the modifications will be immediately revoked, and he will be subject to further disciplinary action. The case will next go to a student judicial board hearing in which sanctions, punishments will be levied or denied for a Troop based on a guilty or innocent verdict. The student judicial board is comprised of 3 to 5 people randomly selected from the student body and is presided over by a member of the student affairs staff. Troop is 22. He's an engineering major and a starting guard on the basketball team. And as we said, he was arrested on a rape charge Friday for a rape which occurred 2 weeks ago Friday after a 20-year-old student identified him in a yearbook picture and two police lineups. Troop was charged with one count of rape in the first degree, and he was released on $10,000 cash bail. The violations of the student conduct code will come after the criminal charges have been resolved. This may mean a delay beyond the usual 10 days the Student Judicial Board has to meet and rule on cases of alleged violations of these campus regulations. Both the victim and the accused would stand before the Student Judicial Board and present their evidence at the hearing when it does come about. I think that it was the correct thing for the president and the administration to do, said Mason, upon Troop's reinstatement to classes, adding, the school acted in a manner that was initially entirely inappropriate. Public safety, the administration, and Suffolk County Police did not conduct a proper or thorough investigation, said Mason. I think that it is in his best interest to be off campus because of the volatile nature of the case, according to Troop's stepmother, Margaret Troop.
Oh, man, I was just going to say something. It occurs to me that maybe one reason why the university, after that, I guess it was a hearing, how it was termed, where they made that decision to allow him some limited access to the campus.
Right.
I wonder whether maybe there was some. Again, I don't know what was said there or what the criteria are. Whether perhaps it was in fact thought by the university to be in Troop's best interest that he not be on campus all the time because of the, in light of what that last comment was, that that there was a might be a volatile kind of situation. So
mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, you know, speculating perhaps that might have entered into it.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's apparently a policy at this school, and I guess I would surmise that a number of other institutions, schools, let's say, where someone is accused of violating some conduct code, that they can be suspended even before it's established that they can that they did actually violate that code. Which again opens up a whole broad question, not only in light of this case, but in general terms as to whether that is logical or fair.
But what happens if he's proven innocent and he's been suspended and he's missed out on classes? I mean, is the university legally liable for that kind of thing?
I don't know. That's a good question. That's why I wonder at the exact criteria to begin with and
mm-hmm.
what the underlying legal or ethical philosophy is behind it, or educational philosophy is,
mm-hmm.
and what happens when it's established, let's say, either through a court or through a university body or educational body of some kind, that the person is not guilty of a crime or misconduct, what happens as far as the fact that the student was given certain limitations, whether the philosophy just comes to be, well, it's an unfortunate thing, but the whether it's, I wonder whether this question has ever been asked. I mean, I'm sure it's been asked, but I wonder when asked, there must be some philosophy that dictates that the person is subjected to the limitations before it's actually established that they are not, in fact, guilty.
Mm-hmm.
That there are cases where people are certainly guilty of certain crimes or misconduct, but in cases where they're not, how does that person resolve in their mind the fact that they were subjected to limitations that weren't necessary? I suppose, again, I was using the analogy of that people don't go, when they can make bail, they don't go to prison before they've been convicted of a crime, but perhaps it's viewed differently. Perhaps the way things have evolved, I'm not just talking about on Stony Brook's campus, but in general, institutions like a university. Whether it's just evolved that it's a different thing than the legal system, that
uh-huh.
that people can be limited in what they can do when they're simply accused of something, and then it's established one way or the other whether or not they're guilty of it, and they can either return to that institution all the time or they're kept from it.
Let me finish up this story here. Several acquaintances of the rape victim attended the rally on Tuesday as well to remind people of the situation of the victim. Lenora Filani, independent presidential candidate for 1988, spoke to a small group that had gathered to have a march for campus safety and the student union, and then brought them to join the larger group in the academic mall. "It is a student fight, and we have to unify," said Esther Lastique, member of the executive board of the Center for Women's Concerns. "They weren't accepting opposition from what they believe, and that is not right," said Maria Garina, a friend of the rape victim of many of the ralliers. "It is not a racist issue. It is an issue of women's rights." Saying she was disgusted with the rally, Garina explained that people were calling things facts that were opinions that they had no way of proving. And I don't know. You know, I don't know if that's necessarily the way that people are looking at that right now. I mean, nobody can prove anything right now. You know, only two people, maybe only one person really knows what happened as far as knowing who did the rape. I mean, it's possible that somebody could be mistaken on identity. But there was no way that the person who did it could be mistaken. He would know if he mm-hmm. was the rapist or not. It is possible, you know, however unlikely or however likely in this case, that the victim could be mistaken. It is possible. To say that that is impossible is, you know, I think that's crazy because people make mistakes all the time. I don't know how, you know, I'm bad with faces myself. I mean, I can't point to somebody in a yearbook and place them immediately. You know, that's just my affliction. I can't do that. You have to look at the evidence here. You have to look at what's being said. This guy has 9 people, his family, you know, saying this person was here. Now, somehow I can't picture somebody's family immediately saying, you know, okay, we can deal with the fact that you raped this person. We're all going to lie for you and say that you were at home. It's just, you know, to get that many people to side and say that immediately, it seems like something would crack. There would be a you know, a hole someplace. Somebody would say, I'm not going to do that. There would be some kind of inconsistency in the story, you see. And I just, you know, at this point, I don't see that in this story.
You say that 9 people...
He has 9 witnesses that say he was someplace else.
It's certainly compelling. I would agree with you that I would say hypothetically it's possible. I'm not saying that it's necessarily the case here, but I'm saying that hypothetically I think it's possible
uh-huh.
that somebody, especially if it's close members of their family, may instinctively, they love their relative, if their relative is involved in something, they may instinctively... shield them, but I'm not saying necessarily this is what's happening here.
Uh-huh.
I would agree with you, in fact, that in this particular case, and we're talking about 9 people. Again, neither you nor I know exactly for sure what happened, but I would say that if we are to look at what has been emerging in this case, 9 people vouching for somebody, I would tend to agree with you that it would seem to me the likelihood is that you could not get 9 people if they all felt for sure that their relative committed a crime, that they would all shield the relative that way. I would tend to agree with you that it would have to be a smaller number of people for that to be more possible. There is very compelling evidence that it is not Mr. Troop.
Now look at the Tawana Brawley case. There were gaps, there were holes in that case. And, you know, I never really had much faith in that case to start with. It just didn't seem like it was a believable story, and there were all kinds of you know, things that just didn't seem to make sense. I don't see that here. You know, I don't see those you know, gaps in logic. You know, why was this person here then if this was happening, and how come he won't answer the questions? In this particular case, the people seem to be answering the questions. They seem to be open, and I don't know if they're cooperating with the authorities. I could certainly understand why they would not want to cooperate with authorities after something like this happens, but they do seem to be open with their version of what happened that night. Now, as far as Troop's story... March 24th was the night that the student was raped here on campus. Mr. Troop says that he left Stony Brook campus on March 23rd. Now, keep in mind, this is vacation week. On March 23rd, with a fellow member of Malik Sigma Psi, a black fraternity, he left his parents' apartment on West 116th Street early the next morning, he said, to discuss job opportunities with Richard Franklin, a manager at the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Mr. Franklin confirmed the discussions, which lasted until about 4 p.m. Okay. Mr. Troop said he then went to his parents' home, where he spoke to his stepmother, Margaret Porter Troop, and his father, Quincy Troop, Jr. His stepmother is an advertising sales representative for the New York Times, and her stepson has been a temporary summer worker in the paper's library for clippings. His father is a poet who teaches at the College of Staten Island and at Columbia University. Now, at least 2 friends visiting the troops, Monique Kleska, a United Nations official from Haiti, and Stephen Rowland, a radio producer from Philadelphia, said they remembered seeing Mr. Troop at the apartment until about 9 p.m. Now, the attack at Stony Brook happened about 10 p.m. By train, it takes about 1 hour and 45 minutes from Penn Station to the Stony Brook train station. Mr. Troop does not have a driver's license and does not know how to drive. And if I'm not mistaken, the train he would have had to have caught to get here would be the 844 train. Now, let's say they remembered seeing him at the apartment until about 9 p.m. Let's say they were off by a half hour and he caught the 844 train. That would put him in Stony Brook at about 10:45. But the attack happened about 10 p.m., according to this. That's if, you know, you stretch it to the maximum. At about 9 p.m., there's more. At about 9 p.m., Mr. Troop said that he went to the home of a friend from high school, Darren Simon, who lives three blocks away. Mr. Simon's 11-year-old brother, Sherwin, said that he and Mr. Troop played video games together until Darren returned with his girlfriend, Ray Corbin, about 9:40. When the rest of the family went to bed, Mr. Troop and Mr. Simon said they stayed up talking until about 5:30 a.m. Mr. Simon's father, Henry, said he woke up about 5 a.m. and heard the young men. Now, here you have a lot of people, from an 11-year-old kid to, elderly people to somebody who works for the Port Authority, all, you know, saying this is what happened.
Yeah, this sounds very compelling. These sound like a very compelling group of alibis.
I just wonder, how did they actually have enough evidence to make the arrest? I mean, can somebody just say, okay, you did this crime, and therefore you get arrested for it?
Well,
no matter what you say?
Again, very good question. From what I gather, unless I don't have all the facts, but from what I gather, the picture was the victim picked out chose a picture, and it was on that basis that the person was apparently arrested. Now, to me, there are a number of different questions that arise here. First of all, and I'm sure you agree with me, and I'm sure anybody agrees with me, that we're not making short shrift of the agony of the victim here.
No, not at all.
Of the rape victim. But
as the accused is saying, we're not denying that a rape took place at all.
Right, right. We're not minimizing I hope nobody thinks that we are, because we are not minimizing what the rape victim has gone through and is going through. But the question in my mind is, I know that in the past there have been innocent cases of mistaken identity, mm-hmm. where people are victims of crimes and without any malice think a person that they have chosen is the person that committed the crime. When it turns out, after all the facts are weighed, or after a court case or whatever, or mm-hmm. new facts come to light further on down the road, that person absolutely did not commit the crime.
And that
no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
That doesn't make the front page when the person is exonerated, when it's
at least,
all over.
I would sense, at least not most of the time. I guess occasionally there are certain cases
in
where
a case
it does,
like this,
but
yes.
I'd say, in a more highly publicized case, it probably does, but in other cases where there's moderate publicity, it does not seem to make the front page if someone's exonerated.
I've seen cases of mistaken identity. I've been involved in at least one case of mistaken identity. I've seen someone falsely accused of something. And I see how it's dealt with by the police. You know, the police don't want to hear the other side of the story. They say, you did it. We know you did it. We're going to stay here until you confess. It doesn't make a difference what you say. Now, being black on top of that, I know, is not going to be a beneficial thing for a victim. So I can only imagine the kind of things that have gone on in this case.
Well, what I wonder about this case, you see, is that, let us say that the police have a role to fulfill, that they, it would seem to me that using certain methods and certain criteria, they make a determination that a victim has adequately identified a suspect, certainly mm-hmm. not to convict them, that's left up to the court, but to make them feel that there is a reasonable chance that that person may have committed the crime, and they then go and detain that person. But my question
in this particular case is, to what degree were the police aware of what seems to me, anyway, I'm just an average, you know, private citizen, but what mm-hmm. seems to me to be compelling mm-hmm. exonerating evidence, to what degree were they aware of it before they picked Mr. Troop up? And to what degree, if they were aware of it, did they take that into consideration? To what degree are they supposed to take it into consideration? And then, of course, the question, I'm going to mention this because the question has come up, would it have been handled differently if Mr. Troop was not African-American?
And I'm going to ask a very blunt question. To what degree do they really care? You know, I mean, if they get somebody to accuse somebody else and they convict that person, everyone's happy.
Well, yes, I
regardless,
think that,
and I, you know, I'm not saying every cop is like this, but I have seen cops that don't care, that are racist like you would not believe.
I'm sure there
working
are
working right here in Suffolk County. It's disgusting the things that they say. I mean, it will never be reported in the newspapers, the kind of things that they say. But I've heard it with my own ears. I've seen it with my own eyes. It's disgusting to think of police that actually are, you know, in this seat of power. You know, I mean, a cop has the ultimate power. He can tell you exactly what to do. I was in the city the other day. Okay, I was walking down the street in St. Mark's Place, and I see this cop kicking all this stuff into the street. You know, this, like, you know, blankets and things like that, and trash, and just like throwing it all in the street. And there's this guy who was selling books. This black guy was selling, you know, books on the street. Everybody does that kind of thing over there. You know, you walk down the street, you buy books and magazines, and he was picking out books and saying, this is pornography, and throwing it in the trash. And the guy was, like, chasing after the books, trying to, like, recover them. And the person, the policeman was saying, don't go near anything unless you want to get in a lot of trouble. And I'm using very nice language, by the way, when I say that. Those weren't the words he used. This kind of thing, it a whole crowd came by and was watching in kind of disbelief, because this was a homeless person. This was a homeless person, and everything that he owned was being thrown into the garbage. You know, this sanitation truck, which was working in conjunction with the police, was being waved on by the cops, and they were just throwing all this guy's earthly possessions into the garbage truck. And he was trying, you know, you could say he was just trying to recover his items, you know. He wasn't making a fight or anything like that, but those policemen were ready for him to say anything that would mean they could enforce the law in their manner of enforcing the law. It was disgusting to see this, to see these two men with guns bullying this poor homeless person who had no place to go, and making it seem like they were some kind of Chuck Bronson, you know, cleaning up the streets of New York. You know, the garbage truck didn't take any of the other garbage on the street. There was plenty of, you know, real garbage on the street. Didn't touch that stuff. Didn't touch it at all. Just picked on this one person. Now, I don't think I'm being, a bleeding heart liberal when I say I doubt that would have happened to him had he not been black, or had he not looked like a homeless person. It's very easy to pick on people when you believe you have an advantage on them. And this kind of thing is not uncommon. That's my point here. It's not isolated to New York City. It happens every day. It happens behind the scenes. It happens in full view. And it's not just policemen. The reason it happens with policemen is because policemen are human beings just like everybody else, and they're subject to the same flaws that other people have. And to think that they're somehow above human nature, above the ills of today's society, that's a very dangerous way of looking at things. And I just wish more policemen would look on things that way and say, you know, not just rush to another cop's defense when they do something. You know, like a cop shoots a wife and two kids, you know, and everybody else says, well, he must have had a good reason. You know, this, when something bizarre like that happens, you sort of, you can't just let the role influence you so much. You have to say, this is wrong from a human point of view.
Well, I think that ideally so. I think you're absolutely right. In practice, what I think is the case is that I think there are a very large number of very dedicated, hardworking, brave, self-sacrificing, ethical policemen with a lot of self-restraint, who know how to use the self-restraint when it's when it's necessary, who don't go beyond where they should go. The problem is, I think it's very likely that there is a minority of policemen who do, let's say, the kinds of things you're describing. But the problem is...
But that's a very interesting parallel there. Because of that small group of people, cops are looked upon with disdain.
Exactly.
Because of a small group of black people that that cause crimes, the black race is looked upon with disdain.
You're absolutely right. That's what, I agree with you 100%.
If people could see that parallel, then maybe we could make some progress
here. Think that you're, I think you raise an excellent analogy there. And absolutely. And I was going to say that unfortunately... In the instances where cops maybe seem overly protective of some rogue cops, so to speak, I think, unfortunately, although ideally they shouldn't be that overprotective, I think the situation is that they themselves, cops as a group, also are sometimes subject to unfair treatment and therefore feel that they have to provide support for one another. But I'm not excusing, that does not excuse situations where cops go beyond where they should go and where, let's say, it's covered up. What I'm saying is that the unfortunate situation seems to be that there are a lot of complex problems and difficulties in society, and and people are not, people I think who are supposed to be in a position to try and coordinate or to take a better overview of these problems, which I guess are, let's say, people and certain people in government are not doing that, and it results in an awful lot of difficult situations.
I think it's something we all have to work on. Cops have to work on it, and civilians have to work on it. No one should be supporting Quincy Troop because he's black. They should be supporting him because they've read the facts and they've decided that the facts support him. Same thing with the policeman who's accused of something. He should not be supported by other policemen simply because he's a cop and because cops have had a raw deal in the past. That's not a valid reason to support somebody without knowing the facts.
No, basically no. But the reason why I'm adding an extra little corollary onto that is that, let's say, whether we're talking about policemen as a group of people or African-Americans as a group of people, it sometimes may be necessary, I can understand why, or any group of people that have some type of commonality, it may be necessary for individuals to instinctively show support for another individual
in the same group, and I'm saying that's
same
wrong.
Group.
Even if the person is right, that's wrong.
Well, I think it's right in this sense. This is where I think it's right. If there exists, whatever group of people we're talking about, a history of things not working for that person because they are, things not going the way they're supposed to go from an ethical standpoint, for that person or for someone like that person because they are a member of a particular group, whether we're talking about African-Americans or policemen or any group with commonality, it's important, I think, for there to be the consciousness of not necessarily backing someone up regardless, even if it's known that they've done something wrong simply because you're a member of in some way of the same group as that person. But I'm saying that it's necessary to back that person up not only from looking at the facts and feeling from the facts that they deserve to be backed up, but also to simply demand that that person get a fair shake, as it were. And I think that in the case of
but they shouldn't be the only ones demanding that, you see.
I agree with you 100%.
I don't think there's a single group that will say, oh, we're being treated fairly. Every group is going to say, we're getting the short end of the stick because of this other group.
That's quite likely.
So,
and I agree with you about more than just the people from a particular group.
We need two things. We need people within whatever group it is to question what's going on and to say, well, I don't necessarily believe this just because he's a member of the same group I am. And we need people from other groups to look at it in the same way and reach a decision and say, well, I agree or I don't agree because of the facts.
Absolutely.
And once we do this more and more and stop thinking of the group so much, then we'll make some real progress because, you know, even if Quincy Troop is proven to be innocent, white people will still be mad for some reason. They'll say, oh, he got away with it because he's black.
Well, I think there will be a segment of certain other groups, in this case, a certain segment of the white population, that will feel, if Mr. Troop is exonerated, they will feel that something is wrong. They won't get the idea that that's what's supposed to happen. When somebody isn't guilty of something, they're supposed to be exonerated.
Right, and the same thing with black people. They'll feel that they've been betrayed, even if he's found innocent, that he had to go through this in the first place. We need more crossing of all these groups.
I agree that there definitely has to be more crossing, but I would just say that in the case of black people, even if Mr. Troop is exonerated, that if there are black people that feel that the question still hasn't been completely addressed, I could understand that because there is a history of there being, in numerous cases, an unequal application of the law to people because they're black.
Absolutely.
So I can understand that being raised as a group issue.
But that's no reason to support somebody, because they're of that group. I mean, I think that's what happened with Tarana Burley. I think that's what happened. I can't say for sure. And that was a disaster. You know, and I know a lot of black people that said it was a farce. So I think they thought it through, And when you think something through, you can reach a democratic decision, not just based on what the person is or what their race is. We've talked for a long time. We want to take some phone calls, 632-6901, if you have a comment or opinion on this. I'd like to hear from you. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello, Eric.
Yeah, what's up?
Nothing, really. First of all, I found something very weird, a message on the phone that I've never heard before.
A message on the phone?
Yeah.
What's that?
Play it for you now. I've never heard it. I was wondering if you have. Wait a second. Oh, my God. What am I doing?
At the customer's request, 980 has been temporarily disconnected and calls are being taken by 7.
Interesting. I think what you have there is a couple of displaced digits. Thank you for bringing it to our attention. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yes.
I can't believe it. I picked it up. This is Russ Mike calling. I need a phone number off of the board behind you at CR1 there.
Can't help you. We're on the air. Sorry. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Eric, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I haven't heard you guys in a while.
Yeah, well, that's because you haven't been listening. We've been here.
See, I've been away for a while.
Uh-huh.
So how you been doing?
We're doing fine. Have you been listening to the show?
Yeah, I just turned it on. What's the topic tonight? I just got home.
Well, we're talking about the rape on campus.
Oh, in Stony Brook?
Yeah, in Stony Brook. Well, you've heard of it then, right?
Yeah, we talk about it in school, social studies class. I don't think that guy did it.
Uh-huh. Why don't you think he did it?
Because he had 9 witnesses that said he was in the city. I mean, come on.
Uh-huh.
And the guy, what is he, a straight-A student or whatever he is?
I'm not sure if he's a straight-A student, but I believe he's...
It's his last year. Why would somebody do that?
Uh-huh.
Unless he's a nutcase. I don't think he's a nutcase, though.
Uh-huh. So... Do you think the issue of whether he's black or white has anything really to do with it?
If I was the police, I would not care. It's either guilty or not guilty.
Uh-huh. But do you think police today are like that for the most part?
It depends. In Suffolk?
Yeah, in Suffolk.
No.
I would have to agree with that much.
The
stress that that causes me, I would have to agree. I mean, how many black policemen do you know in Suffolk County? I've never seen one.
Neither have I.
Here at the campus of the State University at Stony Brook, I've seen dozens of black public safety officers. Okay, so I know that there's some representation there, but I have never yet seen a black police. I mean, I've lived in Suffolk County for decades. I've never seen one. I mean, why is that? New York City, you see black policemen all the time. I even saw an Oriental policeman the other day. I mean, that was amazing. But I never see, I see female Suffolk County policemen, or women, or whatever they're called, but never a black one.
I know, it's strange.
I mean, where are they hiding them?
In the city.
I don't know. No,
that's where they get hired.
Uh-huh.
Isn't like the smarter cops, they come out here, the guys who get the high grades on the test,
I don't know if that's necessarily true.
I thought, like, if you scored high on the test, that you would get on the show. Listen, Eric, I got another call. I'll have to call you guys back later. Again.
Okay, you've got another call. Okay, that's well, we have another call, too, so there. 632-6901, good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
No, bro.
Right. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage. Hello? Good evening, you're on Brain Damage. Hello? Boy, we're getting a flurry of calls today, huh?
Yes, unfortunately nobody's saying anything,
yeah.
But we're certainly getting a flurry of calls. I was just saying that again, not to forget the victim, that historically rape victims have quite a bad time of it. And,
oh, certainly.
So I think that also has
I'm probably
going to
catch hell on the bus tomorrow going down to D.C. for the for the rally, for the things I'm saying tonight.
Well, I don't think so, because I don't think you're saying anything that's untoward, and I think that what you're doing is you're raising issues that point to the fact, to the complexity of a problem in cases like this, and you're raising issues that show that there are many different people and many different people that are victimized or that can potentially be victimized. There is, of course, the rape victim.
Uh-huh.
There is also a person who it seems, from what I've heard about this case, that just doesn't seem to be a strong case against this person, and there would seem to me to be a strong likelihood that he's going to be exonerated. There is also the victims where, if this is the wrong person, there are the victims as far as society at large is concerned, because
mm-hmm.
that means that there is still at large a rapist.
That's very true. And I think there needs to be a statement made by the people supporting Quincy Troop to the people concerned about rape, because it should not be thought that these people don't care and are just interested in protecting Quincy Troop. You know, if someone really believes Quincy Troop is innocent, then that does mean there is a rapist at large on campus, and something should be done about that. And I think the two groups should really get together on this and try to figure it out. We all want the same thing. We all want a safe campus. We all want the various groups of people here on campus to continue to get along with each other. And for the most part, this place is very harmonious. There, you know, this is very unusual for something like this to happen. It's not a violent campus. You have many, many different ethnic groups getting along just fine. Of course, the media jumps on this, and I guess in a sense we are too, only because it's right in our own backyards this time. So we need that line crossing. We need it desperately. We need people from the people that say it's a racist thing to, you know, help out the people who are worried about the rape situation on campus. We need people who are worried about the rape situation to talk about racism a little bit and not factionalize things, because that's the most detrimental thing that can happen.
Mm. And I think that what this case may also raise, if it turns out that some of the police did not follow proper procedure,
mm-hmm.
is the whole general question of administration of police departments, going beyond the individual policeman to how certain police departments may be administered. Is it possible that there is a lack for no good reason, or maybe just because it hasn't been thought through enough, or because maybe it's not an issue that is prominent enough from a political standpoint? The administration of police departments or the training of police, is it possible that police are not receiving as much training in certain sociological or political areas when they go to a police academy, beyond the other things that they're taught, which I'm sure is very necessary? I'm not saying that should be de-emphasized, but that there should perhaps be greater emphasis placed on the general sociology of different groups.
I think nothing should be emphasized more.
And
you know,
I really
that's the
think
important thing.
Yes, I mean, yeah, I mean,
you're
I'm
dealing
just,
with people all the time.
Yeah, and because I think there are many cops that do that very well, but I'm saying that there may be cops that don't do it well, but that could do it well given the training. There may also be cops that no matter what you train, how you train them, they're not going to want to deal with people properly, and they, of course, don't belong on the force to begin with. So, but mm-hmm. that's and it comes back to what you said before, that we're dealing with a whole bunch of different types of individuals.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Hopefully we have some non-silly callers. 632-6901. It's always nice to get people who, you know, have real opinions on matters like this. 632-6901. I'd like to hear from some on-campus people, because obviously this affects campus people, and we do like to hear from them. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. Okay, well, maybe your phone is broken. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Oh, yeah. People on CB channels 4 and 31.
Uh-huh.
They're bums.
Thanks for telling us that. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. What's the deal with the callers tonight? Why isn't anyone talking to you?
I don't know. Maybe it's an organized conspiracy or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Anyhow, I just want to tell everyone, or you or somebody, the one thing about this whole thing that bothers me, and Jim sort of mentioned it, but I think there's someone out there, in all likelihood, I mean, assuming that he didn't do it, there's someone out there who did do it, and this person is having a pretty good laugh at everybody's expense, at our expense.
There's also a murderer in town, too. I mean, you know, within one day of this, someone was murdered in Setauket. It's a sobering little time of the month for this town.
Well, no, what I'm trying to say is that this person who is now sitting there listening to all this and saying, well, I got away with it, has actually fueled a lot of fires here. And they're having a pretty good laugh at our expense. I don't like that.
Hmm.
I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, that's something to consider. Assuming you believe that... that there is someone else who did this, yes.
Well, you see, with such evidence against Quincy having done this, it just seems so likely that there's someone out there who did do this, and I guess it kind of is a negative statement on the way the system works, is that when they find somebody and they say they find Quincy and they say, we think Quincy did it, then they don't go out and look for somebody else who might have done it,
uh-huh.
if you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. You know, in cases like this, where some, and a lot of people have asked this question, when someone is raped, there are certain tests that you can perform to see, you know, if it matches up. Unfortunately, in this case, the rape was not reported for at least, 12 hours, and the victim had already showered, and there was no evidence left.
Right.
That would have made all the difference in the world, and that's, you know, if, God forbid, something like this should happen to anybody listening, that's so important. You have to remember, you know, don't hesitate to report something like this.
I should give her a lot of credit. She's pretty gutsy for having talked about it to begin with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been a very traumatic thing for her, and I think maybe that's why she might have made a mistake, because it is quite traumatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, I mean, how... Let's, you know, I'm not saying she did make a mistake. Let's assume she did. How does someone, after getting all of this started, having all these demonstrations and marches and hostilities... How do you back down after all that, you know?
It's true.
Even if you are wrong, it's very difficult to say, sorry, guys, you know, my mistake there, no hard feelings or anything like that. And again, you know, I'm not saying that that's necessarily the case, but I'm trying to imagine what it must be like to have to do that.
Right, that's true. It must be pretty tough to come out and say I was wrong after all of this.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, this is a very controversial issue. It's about the worst thing that could have happened to this place, I think.
Okay, I wasn't going to get into this, but since you're talking controversy, I want to mention something else.
Go ahead.
You said something about the abortion issue and it being a woman's right. Now, I am pro-choice because I think that there are a lot of situations where a woman will have an abortion whether it is legal or not.
Right.
And so if they're going to do it anyway, I think that it should be a safe system. Now, you were saying that it's a woman's right issue, and I'm not sure it is that, because a lot of these abortions would benefit the unborn baby, because that baby, whether or not, if they are born, if they're unwanted, are not going to have a very wonderful life anyway. So it's not really a woman's right, it's the unborn child's right to a good life, if you know.
Yeah, except, I don't know, I kind of have trouble with that, because how can you predict what a good life is going to be? You know, you can't say this baby's going to have a great life. It happens. Either it happens or it doesn't. People have had great lives who have started from poverty and beaten the odds. I mean, just being born is one chance in a million, you know, so it's, it's very hard to say, yeah, you know, this person's going to, you know, going to have all the advantages and this person's going to have a miserable life. Yeah, I stick to, it's the woman's body, it's the woman's choice.
Well, that makes it all seem so selfish because it just makes it seem like the woman wants to get rid of this baby because it's her choice. It makes it seem selfish, but I don't think that's why women have abortions. On the whole, I think they have abortions because they can't raise this baby in a proper way. They're either unwed or they're very poor. And most of them, I don't think women use abortion as a way of birth control.
I hope not, because, you know, that something like abortion would be a major issue, I would imagine, for anybody that has to go through it. And it shouldn't be, a casual thing. Oh, well, I'm going to get an abortion because, you know, I didn't use birth control, period. I'm not going to feel bad about it. I'm saying, you know, it's the person's choice. But, you know, I would expect they would feel pretty bad about it. You know, it'd be a pretty traumatic thing, but it is their choice to go through it.
I think so, too. I think most women who do have abortions do feel bad about it. But I think when you make it a woman's right issue, then it just makes it seem... I think people get the impression that it's a selfish thing.
You
well,
think people
who says
might,
she has the right?
You think people might go out of their way to exercise that right or something?
In what way?
Well, I have the right to an abortion, therefore...
No. I'm just saying, for the people who are anti-abortion, when you make it a woman's right issue, just to them it might seem kind of selfish.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. There's one also very important thing that a lot of us miss, and I think it's high time we stop missing it. Whenever we see mention of it in the newspapers or on TV, what do you call the people that are against abortion? What do you call them?
Pro-life, I think.
That is such a misleading phrase, you know?
That is misleading.
I mean, for God's sake, homes are being bombed. Abortion clinics are being bombed. These, you know, to say that this group represents pro-life is just wrong. And also, it's an editorial. Whenever you say pro-lifer, you're saying that's what they represent, and that's not necessarily what they represent.
And also, you're implying that the woman who has an abortion is anti-life.
Right, exactly. So you see how these little catchphrases can influence people that haven't really thought about the issue. So what I'm saying is, every time you hear that, every time you see it in the paper, say something, comment, call the paper, call the TV station, say, what are you calling these people pro-life for? That's wrong. That's, you know, that's, I don't know, what's it analogous to? It's like, it's like saying, you know, all soldiers are great patriotic people. It's like, you know, it's propaganda, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's something that you would expect in a totalitarian regime. It's editorializing on an issue that's not supposed to be, you know, the media is not supposed to take sides on. By saying pro-life, they are taking sides, whether they realize it or not.
Right. Unfortunately, they made that label so common that everyone uses it without even thinking about it.
I know, exactly. That's the problem here.
The third thing that I wanted to mention to you, you said something about the bus leaves at 5:30, and then you said something about being on that bus.
Five in the morning, I believe, yeah.
I thought I should let you know that I heard a rumor that it's leaving at 2:30.
Well, there's two buses, actually. Yeah, there's the Polity bus, which is run by the student government, and there's the graduate student bus, which is run by the graduate students. The student Polity bus is leaving at 2:30, I believe, and the graduate student bus is leaving at 5 p.m. Why, I don't know. Perhaps Polity has a tradition of getting lost.
You mean 5 a.m.?
Yeah. Polity has a tradition of getting lost, and it might take them 2.5 hours longer to get to D.C. than it does the grad students who have had all that experience and know their way around much better. I don't know what the reason is. I really don't. But hopefully we'll all get there. Hopefully we'll all get there. From what I understand, and this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to have fun with this. They're going to drop everybody off at RFK Stadium, and everybody's going to have to take the Metro. Now, they're expecting something on the order of 300,000 people at this march. I can't imagine so many people taking the Metro. I love the Metro. I mean, I like taking the Metro a lot, but I just can't imagine so many people doing that.
This is probably going to be the biggest thing you've ever seen.
Well, not necessarily. I was at the march in New York City, the anti-nuke rally, you know, and all those things were in fashion, and that had about 1 million people in the streets. I've been at rallies in D.C. where there have been many hundreds of thousands of people. It's an event, and it's an important event because we're at the stage where something could actually change. Legal abortions are in danger in this country. It could change this year. So every pair of feet down there counts.
Well, it's good to see so many people who believe in the same thing going to Washington and uniting in this.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a fun thing to do, too. You know, no matter what side you're on, to just participate in something like that. You know, it's important. And regardless of what it is you have to do on Monday or on Sunday, you know, this is something that's only coming now. You know, it's worth being a part of.
Well, that's what this country's all about.
That's what I hear.
That's what they say.
Well, thanks for calling.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
632-6901. Let's take a couple more calls, and I've got some interesting things to glance at here that ought to say some things about racism in this land. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Drive me cheap.
That sounded nasty, whatever it was. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Fasten your seatbelts.
Oops. Sorry, I pressed the wrong button there. You know, it's best when you... To prevent my involuntary hand motion like that disconnects people, don't start off by saying a phrase that has nothing to do with what the conversation is. If you do that, it makes it seem like you're leading us on a tangent that we might regret
right.
going on.
Unless, of course, you're somebody who intends not to say anything relevant or to say something abusive, in which case we encourage you to not to curse, not to say anything slanderous, but we encourage you to sound irrelevant when you call, so we'll know right away to cut you off.
Exactly. Just a little public service here. Okay, let's take a couple more calls, and then we'll go to this this other interesting stuff. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
I'm back. Those kids are annoying, whoever those guys just called.
Yeah. That's one word for it. Kids today are just the most annoying generation, I think, that have ever come upon this earth.
I don't know about that little kid Stilskin, you know?
Well, I know all about him, but we won't go into that. What's on your mind?
Let's get back to this abortion thing.
Yeah.
You think it should be illegal?
No. Is that how it came across? No, I don't think it should be illegal at all. I think it should be, you know, every woman's choice, as long as it's within the confines of her you know, system.
I think, yeah, you're right. That's a good answer.
Well, thank you. Have you thought much about the issue?
Yeah, we think of it every now and then.
Yeah?
Yeah, I still think that we should have it. No?
Well, you know, they have this thing now, what, called the abortion pill? And I would imagine that would make this whole point kind of moot anyway, you know?
I haven't heard about that yet.
Well, would it make it moot if it...
Well, if you just pop a pill and have the same thing as going to an abortion clinic, it's kind of hard to bomb a pill, you know?
No, that's true, but wouldn't it still raise the same legal issue whether or not the pill should be made available? I mean,
yeah,
it doesn't...
except it's a lot easier to make the pill than it is to have an abortion clinic.
No question about it, but I'm just saying that I think the entire legal and the legal issue would still remain.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
But you're right that it would be simpler. The mechanics of it would be so much more
simpler
and personal.
Nobody would have to know. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Except the person prescribing the pill. Presumably, I don't think it would be an over-the-counter pill, would it? If it would, then that would be, you're right. It would be
how
that much
more.
How do
you get a prescription for an abortion? That's kind of weird.
Well, you could. You could go to your doctor and say to the doctor, in the same way that you make an appointment with someone. If you want an abortion, someone makes an appointment with some medical professional.
Not all doctors will probably let you do that, you know? Some doctors might be against abortion or for it.
No, that's true. But I'm just saying that someone, if this pill could still be a prescription pill where a doctor would might have to prescribe it. I don't know, though. Maybe it would be over-the-counter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for calling, sir.
All right, I'll see you later.
Okay. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
And believe.
Whoops.
See,
that was the same guy.
I wish.
What did he say that time?
He said, "I can't believe." But you see, I think what he
probably said, "I can't believe you hung up with me the first
probably
time."
Probably
what he's
going to say.
It again the second
time. But you see, Eric, I don't blame you. Although I'm sure that the person calling is not being malicious.
I sense tones, and I was
right. I would have reacted the same way you did, and I guess he just doesn't realize that he's coming off in a way, initially, that makes us think that it's not going to be where we want it to go.
Okay, well, irregardless, let's take a look at this piece of news that a very considerate listener sent to me, which I appreciate, and I want to thank them very much for sending me this kind of thing, and I wish other people would send me material, too, that provoked my interest. The address is WUSB, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. Just drop something in the mail and address it to Brain Damage. Now, folks. The white race is in danger. Did you know that, Jim?
Eric,
on the verge of extinction?
Eric, before I get involved in this colloquy with you,
okay.
I just want to, and I'm not saying that you would have to say this, like a disclaimer, but that you're, I'm just saying my personal expression here is that,
you see the fear that is put into people's minds whenever they're confronted with the truth?
No, but see, Eric, this is the thing. See, I think that, I personally think. Now, you see, I don't want to mess up your shtick, as it
only
were.
Only proving the point,
but,
right here. Go right
no,
ahead.
But no, but see, Eric, if you don't mind, I hope you don't resent me for this. But see, what we're about to engage in should be taken. I personally think it should be mentioned to the audience, especially in light of some of the things we've been discussing earlier in the program, so that we don't come off as if we're trying to fan fires needlessly.
Is this disclaimer going to last until midnight?
No, I'll simply say that some of this should be viewed as satiric.
No, I have to disagree with you there. None of this is satiric. This is very serious.
Well,
this is published.
Eric,
this is published by the National Association for the Advancement
of
White
People. Okay, yes, I'm not saying that what they're saying is satiric. I'm saying that our approach to it, yours and mine, should be construed, I think,
well,
as satiric.
I think our listeners can understand that. I'm sure those two listeners there with machine guns understand it perfectly.
See, Eric, that's the problem. I think that some listeners would, and I'm afraid some listeners wouldn't.
Okay. Let's find out. All right. We have a little questionnaire here. Now, this is spawned from a thought-provoking article in the magazine, I don't know that word, Instauration? Never heard of that. NAAWP members held a white survival demonstration in the heart of the historic French Quarter in New Orleans. Now, David Duke, remember David Duke?
Sure do.
Yeah, he won the congressional race in New Orleans or something like that a few weeks ago. He asked the questions, and the members shouted the answers in unison. Now, I don't know quite how we're going to do this, but We're gonna try. We're gonna try to recreate that event for you. I'll ask the questions, and why don't you guess at the answers? Guess at the answers according to what this National Association for the Advancement of White People says. How's that?
Okay, sure.
And Jim does not believe any of this, what he's saying. And
well,
I'm not gonna make any statement whatsoever, folks, because as you know, I'm just a voice in your radio, and I have no feelings one way or the other. Okay. Ready? First question. Does the U.S. government want to protect the heritage and rights of blacks? You have to respond quickly. It's
well,
a rally.
I personally would say...
No. It's a one-word answer.
Okay,
You have to take the part
in the rally,
of
the people in the rally said.
This is a white survival demonstration. You're supposed to take the part of the white survivalists, okay?
Okay.
So your answer would be...
I think the white survivalists would say yes.
Very good. Does the U.S. government want to protect the heritage and rights of yellows?
I think a white survivalist would say yes.
Okay. You like that phrase, huh? Does the U.S. You're going to love a couple of the ones coming up. Does the U.S. government want to protect the heritage and rights of Indians?
I would say the U.S. government would say yes.
Would someone else step in here? He's no fun.
No problem.
Does the U.S. government want to protect the heritage and rights of whites?
Yes.
No. The whole point is no.
Oh, I can't.
Okay. How many countries... These are white supremacists we're dealing with here. How many countries of the world are yellow?
20. All of them.
20. All yellow. Correct. How many countries of the world are black?
40.
30. All black. How many countries of the world are brown?
I can't read it. It's too far.
You're not supposed to be reading. You're supposed to know that.
Rally yelled, I can't read it. It's too far.
60,
all brown. Okay, this one you got to get right, so just memorize
Eric,
before
what's,
I...
What's brown?
What's brown? I guess brown is Arab and Puerto Rican and stuff like that, right?
Everyone's brown.
Oh, I don't know. Okay, how many countries of the world are white?
One, two.
Only one, Iceland. Is Iceland enough? Iceland is not enough.
Is it white because it has all the snow?
I guess that's what they mean.
Nobody there.
Who are the racists? Is there integration in Peking? No, everyone is yellow. Who are the racists? Is there integration in Mexico City? No, everyone is brown. Because you guys aren't quick enough. Who are the racists? Is there integration in Nairobi?
Yes.
No, everyone is black. I'm turning your mics off. London? Yes. In New York? Is New York integrated? Yes. Is Paris? Yes. Is Toronto? Yes. Is Chicago? Yes. Is Los Angeles? Yes. Is New Orleans? Yes. Who is integrated? All the white countries. Who has the highest birth rate in America? The browns. Who has the next highest birth rate? The blacks. Who has the next highest birth rate? The yellows. Who has the lowest birth rate? The whites. Who has the lowest immigration into America? The whites. What's happening to our cities? Is Atlanta going black? Yes. Is New York going brown and black? Yes. Is Los Angeles going brown, yellow, and black? Yes. Is there any city of the world going white? No. Not really. Is there any country getting whiter? No. How many white countries are going black, yellow, and brown? All of them. What does this mean? That the white race will die. Sweden's going brown. Any more Ingrid Bergmans? No. America's going brown. Any more Cheryl Teagues? No. France is going brown. Any more Brigitte Bardot's? No. What does this mean? We will die. Is our government concerned about the survival of the bald eagle? Yes. Is our government concerned about the survival of the blue whale? Yes. Is our government concerned about the survival of the tiny snail darter fish? Yes. Is our government concerned about the survival of the white people? No. Was our government created by white people? Yes. Our science? Yes. Our medicine? Yes. Our freedoms? Yes. Is there any all-black nation that's free? No. Is there any all-brown nation that's economically sound? No. Are there any organizations fighting for black rights? Yes. Are there any fighting for brown rights? Yes. Are there any fighting for white rights? Very few. What one fights for white rights? Let's all say that together. What one fights for white rights? Oh, I can't believe this. The NAAWP. What's the solution? Is it white unity? Yes. Is it white honesty? Yes. Is it white courage? Yes. What do we do about immigration? Seal the borders. What do we do about the black birth rate? Stop paying for it. What do we do about amnesty? Fight it. In the battle for white survival, can we win? We must win. And this comes from a little piece of paper sent from the National Association for the Advancement of White People. During and right after the demonstration, disturbed looks crossed the faces of many in the crowd. They were actually thinking of themselves as members of the white race, a race in trouble. This was one demonstration they wouldn't forget. In reality, they were probably wondering, am I ever going to get out of here alive? I don't know. There's a whole lot of this stuff. Worst letters I can possibly think of. I can barely say it without stuttering. NAAWP principles. We demand an immediate end to racial discrimination and quotas against white people in employment, promotion, scholarships, and in union and college admittance. We want American government, military, education, and business to make excellence the sole criterion for advancement. No more immigration. We believe that America, Canada, and Europe already have the maximum population for the maintenance of good economic health. Legal and illegal aliens are increasing unemployment among citizens, adding to already overburdened welfare rolls and contributing to violent crime. The time has come to demand enforcement of our laws concerning illegal immigration and to severely limit legal immigration and an end to race hatred in media. We want an end to the chronic portrayal of white people as exploiters and oppressors of blacks and other minorities. Such portrayals instill guilt in white children and hatred in young blacks that often manifests itself in violent crimes against white people. And finally, excellence in all things. We believe in a society where the young are educated to the best of their ability, a society in which the best qualified, hardest working, and most talented are rewarded commensurate with their contribution to the nation. We believe in equal justice under the law, equal opportunity, and equal rights as the fairest means of determining the best in any field. True equality and opportunity will enable the men and women of quality to step forward and serve the ideal of a higher humanity. Now, this group is popping up all over the place. And it's kind of disturbing. Why we must support South Africa, a whole big spiel on why South Africa is really not such a bad place after all. There's also all kinds of advertisements for various books that this organization has. The Racial History of Scandinavia. The Nordics of this region are described. For a dollar, you can get that. An Inquiry Concerning Racial Prejudice. Is racial prejudice the sin we're told it is, or is it a natural defense? You Gentiles, a boasting anti-Gentile attack by a prominent Jew, very revealing of Jewish attitudes. Yes, Jews Must Live, a Jew Reveals Shady Business Practices of Jews. what else can I say? The Zionist, excellent analysis of the foundations of Zionism, the plot against Christianity, excerpts of the Talmud with Hebrew and English side by side. Uncovering the forces for war, who starts wars and why. Pearl Harbor, after a quarter of a century, a most comprehensive book on Roosevelt's treason at Pearl Harbor. The Grand Dragon, perhaps the most revealing book ever published exposing Jewish attitudes towards Aryans. The author reveals the intense hatred and duplicity of Jews. She writes, I felt sorry for him because honesty, in my opinion, was a vice of children and a vice my kind never had. We were old liars. This book is a must for all seekers of truth. And this is one I don't really quite know what it's saying. It's kind of worrisome. The 6 Million Reconsidered, one of the finest books offering an overview of communism, Zionism, and Judaism. Beautifully illustrated. I'm going to stop right there. That's.
Is it a pop-up figures in it too?
I don't know. The National Association for the Advancement of White People. Now, as you may remember, we were trying to get a hold of them a few weeks ago when David Duke won that congressional race, state congressional race. You may say, you know, they're anti-black, but they seem to be quite a bit of anti-Jew stuff in there too. And what color are Jews? Does anybody know? Are they? They're not black. They're not brown. Aren't they white? Don't they count as the white people? Yet somehow they don't seem to count as the white people that they're trying to protect. You know. So this is something that's not just that only black people should be concerned about. Obviously, there's more to it than just that. It's anti-black, anti-Jew, anti-liberal, anti- what have you, you know?
Interesting, the Ku Klux Klan, whose ideas are similar to the ideas expressed by the NAAWP, of course, traditionally has been anti-black, anti-Jewish, and for many years anti-Catholic as well. So it's interesting how these hate groups they find many different groups or a number of different groups to hate. They sometimes are known for only hating one group, but are diversified and have all kinds of reasons, not valid reasons, of course, but they can come up with all kinds of reasons to explain why things are so bad and assign them to certain groups that they do not want to have around.
I'd like to read a letter from their letters to the editor section. Dear editor, wouldn't it be wonderful if the blacks thanked whites just one time for their marvelous buses and trains, which do so much to relieve sore black feet? Blacks complain when the white man's miracle of television caters more to whites than to blacks. Blacks who never visualize the wheel complain about seating on the white man's magic flying carpets known as jetliners. Blacks protested against the white man's fabulous voyages to the moon and back for the ridiculous reason that the enormous cost of spaceflight was an insult to black poverty, but factually because of his racialist, that's what they call themselves, racialist, not racist, racialist, his racialist envy of the white race for being literally worlds ahead of his own. Blacks have never thanked the whites for a constitution or the Bill of Rights under which they live, or law and order, which prevails to a greater extent under white domination. But then, blacks have never thanked whites for printing a written language, an alphabet, schools, or even books. Perhaps it's best most blacks can't read. If they could, they might learn of all this, and a thanking industry would ensue, and they'd so bog down whites thanking them for all of the benefits blacks have received that the Ferris set would never get to work.
It's amazing. it's amazing.
Wow,
those concepts... some interesting ironies there. NAAWP says that blacks should thank whites for transit systems, and yet it was a black man that invented the third rail. And I wonder what the NAAWP would say about that. And they talk about blacks. They complain that blacks don't thank whites for the space program, or they complain that some blacks complained about money being spent on the space program when many blacks lived in poverty, yet they... I'm sure that all kinds of higher mathematics went into the goes into the space program, and part of mathematics is algebra, and algebra was developed by someone that I guess the NAAWP would term a brown person, someone that was not white, in other words. So just a couple of interesting points of irony, and that's it'll be interesting to see if the NAAWP would be willing to thank the black community for producing the likes of Dr. Charles Drew, who came up with an effective way to have blood transfusions, saving how many countless lives was saved. And Dr. Charles Drew was a black man. So those are just a few interesting ironies.
It's not just an attack on black people; it's an attack on us all.
Absolutely.
I mean, listen to the first sentence of this next letter, which I'm only going to read the first sentence of because I don't want to read the whole letter. Dear editor, a grim chapter of modern history came to an end with the passing of Rudolf Hess.
Oh.
So that pretty much tells you where they stand.
Of course, initially funny, but at the same time, I don't want to make it sound like I'm making light of it. It's very frightening and disturbing.
It is.
Because what starts out as being funny can become the Third Reich.
Especially when you consider it, this guy just got elected. I believe easily, fairly easily. Was it close?
I don't know what the... I don't remember what the...
The fact of the matter is, he now holds an elected office. He was elected by people who live in his area. And this kind of thing is not uncommon. This is not, something that you can just brush aside.
Absolutely.
It exists, and we have to face it. Now, we're going to take a couple more calls, then we got to go. The brothers are here, and we got some good stuff for you, right?
Oh. We're rocking.
We're rocking. Okay.
Not much talking tonight.
Not much talking. Except for the last few minutes of brain damage. 632-6901. Let's go to the phones. Good evening. You're on brain damage.
I just want to say that last talk you guys were... It was extremely ignorant and uninteresting for your listeners. But that's okay. I want to get back to abortion.
Well, wait. What was uninteresting about it?
I won't get into details, but...
Well, if you make a statement, shouldn't you back it up and say why?
Well, you want to have some more callers in. But back to abortion. So what you're saying is that these little aborted babies are not human life. Is that what you're trying to say?
At a certain stage, I don't think they can be considered human beings, no.
I believe that human beings have souls.
Well, that's a very controversial issue, whether I believe that they have souls.
No, because you're making the point. Do you believe that, personally?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
No. I'm not sure of anything.
Oh. Okay. That explains a lot. Okay.
You weren't expecting that, were you? 632-6901. Good evening. You're on brain damage.
Yeah, first, I'd like to say that we should just ignore that fool that just called and get back to the issue at hand.
Well, ignoring fools leads to problems later, but go ahead with your point.
Okay, you were just talking about the white Aryan race and white supremacists and all that, and I'd just like to start off by saying that those guys are assholes. They were on a couple of programs, Morton Downey, they were on a couple of other programs that I've watched, and they spout such crap like you just read, and what's sick about it is they actually believe that that they're right, you know, that they're standing up for this cause of the white race, and it's disgusting.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, this group is developing a following, and incidents like what's happening at Stony Brook right now tend to fuel the fire, and that's why I was saying before, you know, it's very important that we cross the lines and you know, mix the groups up so that there isn't one side against another side, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
When you have that, you know, these kind of things pop up.
But you were also saying before that what people don't they hate, and I think basically it comes down to the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. That's their view, I guess, of what the white race is. Everything else is trash to them.
Uh-huh.
And these people need to go to some sort of therapy or whatever it is to have these people sociably or socially learned, you know, be taught social norms, because that is not normal. And if they want to, you know, build this race that is supposedly normal and strong and all that, then maybe they should consider their values, because it goes back even in the Bible and whatever it is that they want to quote from, that all men is created equal.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they're being real hypocritical.
Oh, yes. I was just going to say I'm sure that, and the caller, I'm sure, feels this way, that not everybody that's a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant is a member of a hate group, you know, or views people who aren't white Anglo-Saxon Protestants with the disdain that this group does. But I think that what this group is saying, that's their standard of what normalcy is, of being a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant.
Exactly what they say.
So what do you think the best way to handle something like this is? Just to ignore it or deal with it in some other way?
Well, you certainly can't ignore it, because the problem does exist, and to ignore it will only, you know, fuel the fire, like you said. I just want to raise one point. I remember reading somewhere that, I'm not sure if it was this particular group, the Aryan race or whatever it is, but there was one particular group that had some plan in poisoning the water of major cities that had a mixture of a lot of races, New York being one of them. I believe Detroit, Chicago, Boston were in those lists. And they also had plans on actually assassinating government officials. And just if you think about that alone, that again is another sick thing that these people, you know, think.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think to remedy the problem, again, it's a real hard thing to do, because these people are actually putting government people in office. So
it's a true test of democracy. You know, you can't respond to it in an undemocratic way and you know, ban them altogether. But you know, there's got to be a way to instill values in people so that this kind of crap doesn't catch on.
So that they can be voted the heck out of office, too. I mean, that's a perfectly democratic way.
Right.
You're absolutely right. By educating people to understand the danger.
I don't want to sound overly simplistic, but I think a lot of this is rooted in misunderstandings, you know?
I think you're absolutely right.
I think where this comes from, actually, is if you trace the lines of their parents, you know, if you trace what they've been told by their parents and so on, that's all where it comes from.
I think very often, yes, that is what happens.
I know I've never been around, at least in my family, a prejudiced person. You know, my mom's always told me that, you know, people are the same, and blacks and whites and Spanish people or whatever it is, there's no difference between us. We're all human beings. We're all of the same, you know, of the same originality, the same species that started, you know, long, long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's just ridiculous that racism actually exists, and we're going to be coming up on the year 2000. You know, it's sick.
Yeah. What do you think of racial mixing?
You mean marriage? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I see no problem with that. If two people are in love with each other, then they should be together. If either one of their parents or whoever it is has a problem with that, then that's something that person's going to have to deal with. As long as these people are in love with each other and willing to sacrifice whatever it is that they have to sacrifice to deal with ignorant people who think that interracial marriages are not what it should be, then they should do it.
You see, if there's one thing you can point to that almost everybody who considers themselves a member of a certain race will agree upon, is that mixing the races is bad. And that's precisely why I think mixing the races is what we're supposed to be doing. Because here we, you know, if you believe in evolution, we all have these different backgrounds. And what good are they if we don't mix them all up and learn from each other and create something completely different and new?
That's exactly correct. The last caller, not to say that he was a fool, but he did ask you one question that was kind of important, and he asked you if you believed that there was a soul. Now, I believe that there is, and soul will just go by that for a moment. since the soul does exist, in heaven or wherever it is that you go to, say, there is no black or white. People die and their souls join together. And that's the way it should be on Earth, the same way. You know, it should just be a matter of beings, of souls, not a matter of, oh, well, you're white or you're black or you know, segregate by color, race, or whatever it is, or religion even.
Or beliefs or anything, yeah.
It's really sad.
Uh-huh.
But,
it wastes a lot of time and effort, and, you know, we could be doing so many other positive things.
Well, I mean, there are problems in this country that need to be faced, like the homeless and starving and all that. And those are problems that we should be dealing with, along with the other problems that we have, like racism and all the other social problems that we have. And we're more concerned with helping people outside of our own country. What I think America should be interested in is settling the problems within our own country and not worry about everything else that's going on in the world unless it directly is going to affect us. And it's really sad. You know, this country is in a real bad turmoil, and it doesn't seem like we're going to get out of it.
Well, there's ways to get out of it, and I think one of the most important ways is just to keep it on the agenda, keep talking about it with, you know, whoever happens to be around. Don't forget what's going on.
Yeah, maybe we should revamp the entire government system of this country.
Well, it's always possible. Thanks for calling.
No problem.
And that brings us to the close of the program tonight. We had quite a lively little discussion there on all kinds of things. It's good. That's what I want to see. You know, I want to see people bring these things up. Again, should be an interesting rally tomorrow. Look for us on the news. We'll, you know, be up to all kinds of interesting things. Next week, of course, we'll be back with another edition of Brain Damage. Jim, thanks very much for coming by.
Thank you very much for having me.
And stay tuned for The Brothers coming up next with not a lot of talking, right?
Just recovering from a severe case of laryngitis.
Whoa, what happened to your voice?
And bronchitis.
Wow.
So,
well, you won't be hearing much of Brother Nick tonight. Is Brother Bill making an appearance?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know.
Well, maybe he can help rescue you here.
I hope to God.
Well, it'll be worth listening to just to hear the few times that Brother Nick does talk.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will make radio history.
Harvey Firestone, like Firestone kind of.
You weren't at a Mets game yelling and screaming,
no,
were you?
No, okay. No. I was laid up for weeks. Not that anyone cares. But,
of course we care. All listeners care. Our listeners are a family. Come on.
They are.
We care. People, let's call up 632-6901. Tell Brother Nick you care. He doesn't think you care. Can you believe this? I'm Eric Corley. Be back again next week. Have a good week.
Nick Lowe will be playing a sold-out show at CW Post. Gil Scott-Heron will be appearing at SOBs. Paul Winter Consort will be at the Hayden Planetarium.